For the record, I'm done trying to make y'all comfortable.
That's right.
For the record, you ain't trying to grow, then it's done for you.
That's right.
For the record, lab on me going all the way.
All the way.
For the record, ain't trying to link, no time to waste.
Stop calling.
For the record. 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 For the record, I'm done trying to make y'all comfortable.
That's right.
Here we go again, season 9 on the clink. Wow, what an amazing 8 seasons prior we've had. Hitting that 1.4 million downloads, and we're on our way to 2 million downloads. I guarantee you, 2023 is going to be huge. This is episode 1 of the clink, season 9, and we have an unbelievable guest who has given me his time today. He's from Melbourne. His name is Johnny Walker. He was an enforcer, a force to be reckoned with, a very, very powerful fighter. And today he's a powerful man, but in many other ways, in a positive way, a father, a hardworking man, and a leader in his community. Johnny, welcome to the clink, brother.
It's good to be here, brother. Thanks for having me.
Mate, I appreciate your time because you are a busy man. Life's full on for you these days. You've got the family to juggle. We will talk further, obviously, about what you're doing today with work, but, mate, that's full on. And you've given up your time to come on the clink, and I think with a very worthy story. Thank you.
No, I appreciate you having me, and I appreciate you letting me, you know, get my story out there, and, you know, any help young blokes are going to have along their way, you know. And if you can help one or two, you know, I've done my bit, you know.
You have, brother, and I'm going to be really honest with you. You know, the clink was always put out there to help at least one person, and I can honestly say at 1.4 million downloads, there are many people who love to listen to the clink, and I feel that opening season 9 with the Johnny Walker story is going to be quite a powerful story. Johnny, you from Melbourne. Did you grow up in Melbourne?
Yeah, always from Melbourne. So I grew up in the western suburbs of Melbourne in a suburb called Newport. Just a working class area, you know, blue collar. A lot of just factory workers, wharfies back in the day, refinery workers. You know, just blue collar. That's how I grew up. My dad was always a hard worker. You know what I mean? So
Johnny, was dad also too a part of that hard working sort of area? Was he a part of the wharfies?
Yeah, no. So my dad's a fitter and turner by trade. So he's always a tradie. And he used to bounce back in the day, so he'd do his day shift and go and work night shift in the nightclubs in Melbourne in the 90s.
Wow, that would have been some interesting times.
Yeah, so most nights he'd come home with blood cover over him. So back then the bouncers weren't that nice. So, yeah.
It must run in the blood, brother, because I can tell you what, you can hold your own hands up pretty well, so your dad must be pretty proud to see his son come through with an iron fist.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, like growing up, obviously, being the oldest out of three boys, it was a big part of my dad to make sure his oldest son could look after himself and look after his younger brothers. So, yeah, my dad had me punching the pads from a very young age and if I didn't keep my hands up, he'd give me a slap around the face. So, yeah.
That's how it was back then. You keep your hands up and your mouth shut if you had nothing worthy to say, otherwise you copped a fucking good clip.
That's right.
How old were you when you started throwing your hands, mate?
So probably I was about 8 years old when my dad used to start getting me hitting the pads and that. And then probably from 8 to 9, there was a local kickboxing gym down in a suburb called Williamstown North, which is right near Newport in the west here. And went down there. I'd done traditional kickboxing for a good 4 years down there till I was about 12. 13, then obviously started high school, and I sort of, obviously, you know, you go to year 7 in high school and you start hanging around the lads and start hanging around train stations and mucking up a bit. So I probably was away from the fighting and the training and that for 12 months, and then my old man sort of grabbed me by the ear and said, I'm sick of your little, you know, get down, I'm going to take you down the box. He took me to a local boxing gym in Williamstown under a very hard man, Cliff Chamberlain. I think he took me there initially to teach me a lesson, to give me a bit of a touch up and get me off of, you know, let me know, you know, there's always someone tougher. And as you know, in that scenario, in a boxing gym, you're always going to find someone tougher. It doesn't matter who you are or what you've done. Sort of backfired a bit.
Absolutely. Yeah,
so I ended up going down there, and that's where it all started.
I've got to be honest with you. You know, you, It's something that I want to just touch on. I think it's very important. Obviously, your dad's seen that it would give you some worth and discipline. You know, and I think with the young people today, there should be more young people going into these martial arts gyms, whether it be MMA, Muay Thai, kickboxing, boxing.
100%.
Because I feel that it really gives a sense of worth. You really know what your position is in the gym for starters and what your level of fighting is, no matter how tough you think you are on the street. There's no knives.
Yeah, that's right.
You're using your hands or your eight limbs.
Yeah.
And even with MMA, you know, there's other sort of grappling and stuff like that, groundwork. Mate, it's a lot of variables, and to be good at that takes a lot of commitment. I just want to ask you, you know, what are your thoughts at the moment with the way that our young people are today? And I know that, you know, you are really giving back these days to wanting to see young people not go down these roads. I mean, Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, we've all got youth issues at the moment that are really nothing like you and I ever experienced. And we didn't come through a real easy time either.
No, I mean, I got a 16-year-old son, so this question hits home, and this is something I think about all the time, you know. Obviously, I was kicked out of school at 15. I'd done an apprenticeship from that age, and obviously always in the gyms now, you know. Back, like, we were rough kids growing up, and we, you know, we used to, you know, have our punch onto the local train station shops and that, or against other kids. And but this the young generation now are thinking it's, you know, cool or tough to carry a shiv or to make a shiv at home, these homemade shivs, or cut people's faces, dog scar them, and it's gone to a putrid level. And I mean, I remember
it is putrid. Yeah. It's actually fucking weak. It's weak. I don't think it's tough or any clout or nothing. Deserves no respect whatsoever.
No respect at all. And yeah, I remember growing up, if kids that carried weapons, you know, you get the one or two kid that would carry a weapon at school. I mean, you'd absolutely punch it. You'd absolutely punch holes in them. You know what I mean? And they would actually get bad. They'd get battered. You know what I mean? Just for being a weak cunt that carries a shiv around, and you know, and you see young kids like go out now. I mean, just seeing on the news the other day, an 18-year-old was killed, and a 17-year-old the other day.
It's horrific.
These, I'm going to call them putrid. These putrid cunts are pulling shivs out and just not even knowing how to use them, and just hitting people in the wrong spots and taking lives. And then I can guarantee you, because they're not these kids, though, they're not hard. They're not hard. So they're ending up doing 20, 25-year sentences. They're in the cell crying, you know what I mean?
100%. I've always said, and I think you'll relate to this, many of us that have walked the same path, Ken, I always felt that, and which has happened, we've talked about before in a few other episodes in the past, that I would rather have gun pulled to my face.
Yeah.
Just stare that person in the eyes and have words, because you've got a 50-50.
Yeah.
If someone's going to pull a gun on you, they're going to think. Unless it's a heavy hitter,
yeah,
who's out there getting paid to put you off.
Yeah.
Someone just comes up with a gun, probably not even loaded 80% of the time. For that 20% that there's one in the clip, one in the chamber ready to go, you can be guaranteed that you've got every chance in the world of talking that person down or out of it, and they're going to shit themselves and run, because pulling that trigger is final.
Yeah.
It is. There's only one way. You use a gun, it relates to death.
Yeah.
You don't think of it to harm. You think of to kill.
That's right.
You know, I'd be more worried about somebody who's erratic, pulls out a knife, and out of fear, because that's all it is. They're weak as fuck.
Yeah.
They're not tough.
Nah.
And you know, these kids that are out there, and they just strike,
yeah,
as you said, you know, like, and are striking places that are fatal blows,
yeah,
you know, arteries or places that instantly are going to kill or bleed out. Mate, I just don't get it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I personally wouldn't like to be confronted with that. I think, you know, you would have to do everything in your power to defend yourself,
yeah,
but you'd rather have a gun pointed at you than a fucking knife of an erratic person who was scared. The sad thing,
yeah,
is, like you said,
yeah,
they do 20 years, bro, yeah, and their life's gone.
Their life's fucked. And
their assholes start clenching.
Yeah.
They talk shit. The next minute they're buckling over in the cell, and, you know, they feel that all their 5'8"s and their, I don't even know if you want to call them brother, whatever they call each other these days,
yeah,
SJs or whatever, I don't,
yeah,
even know who the fucking words are. They're not going to be there.
Nah, that's what I mean. They will go, mate, once.
You're a gronk.
You're a gronk, and you're in there doing 20 now, and these blokes won't even have you on the phone list, you know what I mean? They definitely won't send their money in, and, you know what I mean? It's
You talk about
I've got a 16-year-old son, and I tell him all the time. Every time he goes out or catches a train to the city, you know, I just tell him, mate, just be careful, mate. People, you know, other kids out there carrying sheaves or whatever they're doing, and you know, it's just
It's big up here too, bro. It is. Like, my son's 12, and I've just started letting him go with his, like, he's an A student, he's an academic, he's about to go into high school under the rugby league excellence program up here.
Yep.
So he's in with a good crew. Yeah. Of young men that are focused on their futures. But I worry for them that they all like my son, like where he's like his dad, wears a nice Gant shirt, nice pair of Asics. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, but he's not a gangster. Yeah. He's not a thug. He's not a lad.
Yeah.
He just likes to look smart, which then puts a persona out there for these other lads and eshays, you know what I mean, to come and attack or come and have a go. He's a 12-year-old young boy. Yeah. Growing into a young teenager. And I worry for him every time he gets on a bus and just goes down a local shopping centre with his buddies or to the footy field or, you know, they go to the beach and do what the boys do.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
Like I always say to him, you know, you've really got to sort of be aware. And I try to – I don't want them to live the life that we ever lived, ever, you know, but I always want them to be street smart enough to know the body language of something or how to walk away in their best interest.
100%.
Rather than get into a conflict situation, you know. My boys have done Muay Thai now since they were babies, you know, and can actually defend themselves but refuse to be aggressive. Yeah. It's not in their nature. They're taught discipline, and it's not to go out and hurt people. Yeah. It's to walk away, you know. We both proudly wore the same colours back in the day, you know, I have a lot of love and respect for many of the men that were there and you know, I don't have a lot to do with anyone these days and, you know, haven't done for many, many years, just purely that's my choice.
Yep.
But definitely thoroughly enjoyed, and I will say I loved the brotherhood when I was a part of it and would never have changed a thing. I come through the old guard like yourself.
Yep.
And back in the time where you come along, our particular club that we're with was a very strong force to be reckoned with. And I must say Melbourne had some enforcers down there, and you coming into the club became an enforcer of the club, if I can put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, like you said, it was, you know, I'm on the same page with you with that. I mean, it's not my lifestyle anymore, and it's not what I'm aiming to do, but, you know, I wouldn't take anything. I wouldn't, you know, I don't regret anything that's happened. I love the club, would have died for the club, you know what I mean? That patch was everything to me, and that's obviously when I got down there, and the way I treated my boxing career, you know what I mean, and I wanted to be the best boxer I could be. You know, when I joined, I wanted to be the best brother I could be too. So when I went down there, I just fitted straight in. You know what I mean? I mean the brotherhood, and like you said, back under the old ways, it was a club to be reckoned with, and you know, we all stuck together, and you know, we all loved each other, and I mean, fucking, it was tight. It was fucking good. You know, it was how it should be. But
there was no easy path. And for those that think that, you know, like you know, look, a lot of I guess clubs these days don't have the same sort of structure as there once was in reference to process of coming along and earning those stripes, being accepted by all. You know, there was definitely plenty of rules and regulations, and if you didn't abide by them, well, you knew about it as well as. An up-and-coming or a member of any stature, you know. And it was something that, you know, you respected.
Yeah.
Respect was huge. Yeah. And we did have a brotherhood, a family. You know, you always had your brother beside you to eat with, check in on, you know, it wouldn't matter. Yeah. I don't know what it's like today. Yeah. And to be honest with you, I don't have an interest in really what happens today. And good luck to those that are living the life. And if it's for them, then I wish you all the best. Yeah. But You were in around a period too with whilst myself where, you know, there was a lot of, I'll call it war between clubs, one in particular where we both lost a lot of brothers.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was a tough time to come out that other side. And you know, we did. We're still here today, thank God.
Yeah.
But along your journey, you ended up in a situation which ended up you in jail and... That was for a very, very serious charge of murder, which obviously was then, once taken to court, accordingly downgraded. How was that for you?
Yeah, leading into that, like, yeah, I mean, I was, you know, a good, I won't mention their names, but a close brother of ours was shot, you know, late 2011, and that took its toll. That took a toll on the whole club nationwide, and obviously down here, you know, massive affecting, and obviously being my best mate, and
God bless.
I was there when it happened. You know what I mean? I was right next to him, and so that took a big toll on me, and then that took a big toll on him, obviously, as well. And then after that, I spiraled out of control. With, you know, just partying and, you know, not really being reckless, and going from that very structured boxing career that I, you know, couldn't eat two cans of tuna because I just went way, you know, just sort of didn't give a fuck if I lived or died. That's the best way to say it. And when you're living a structured sort of life like that and not caring if you live or die, it's you create a warpath on your way. And yeah, and obviously, you know, it was hectic times, and I sort of ran out of control. So the time I got to the incident that popped off at the clubhouse, that incident itself was nothing to do with nothing. That was just a random incident.
No.
A random incident.
But at a very, very vulnerable time for everybody, where everyone was just on high alert.
I mean, like something that's never really been spoke about. Like, there was an incident the night before that happened, and I won't go into it, but there was an incident the night before that happened at the Melbourne clubhouse. And then obviously the next day, when we weren't even meant to be there, we were actually going for a ride. So that's why there was only four of us in there. And one had left time the bloke was rocked up with an issue with the Banditos. I mean, the papers reported it, saying that a dog was kicked and that, but obviously me or my co-ies, we didn't give a story, and I still wouldn't give a story today. But I mean, someone's rocked up to the clubhouse. No. Someone's ended up in the clubhouse. A fight's broke out, and you know, a bloke's passed away and lost his life. And next minute, like 8 months later, we're all getting charged. You know, three of us are getting charged with murder. And we find ourselves on remand at the Melbourne Assessment Prison. And yeah, it was just you know what? Probably at that time, and probably a lot of close people will say to me that I probably needed some jail time. Probably not the 8 years I'd done.
Just to bring you back to reality a little bit, do you think? Yeah, because you had become so wild.
Yeah. Reckless and wild, and thought, you know, there was a time there I thought, fucking, you know, we can do what we want. You know what I mean? No one's going to stop us.
Which would have evidently led you to probably being dead, not being here today, and your son without a doubt.
100%. And that's where it would have led, because, I mean, you can't be so reckless, and there's always someone bigger and better. It doesn't matter who you are, what you think you're doing. You know, I mean, it doesn't, like you said, it only takes one to get hit in that wrong spot or whatever it is. You know, I mean,
look at life today, brother. Yeah. You look at life through Sydney. You know, what I mean, they're throwing around peanuts, and people are just taking women, kids, men. Like, it's fucking disgusting.
That's what I've said,
you know, the way that it is today is just beyond anything ever we were living by rule code, or, you know, that was just, you just didn't do, you know, and even once the drive-by started, you know, that wasn't the go.
Yeah, no.
You know, and you're very, very, very honest about what you're saying in reference to that, mate. Yeah. You could have been very vulnerable.
Yeah. It was just a random, something random that had happened, and there was no meaning. There was nothing in it, you know what I mean? It was a fight, and you know what I mean, and you know, and someone's passed away from it, and obviously, you know what I mean, not taking anything away from what happened, but it's just where it happened. Obviously, at a clubhouse, bikies involved. You know what I mean?
Best possible story for a media outlet. Yeah. Worst possible scenario for you blokes there.
Yeah, 100%, 100%, and like, I don't take nothing away from the bloke that lost his life, but you know, at the same time, I always say to people that, you know, we were at the clubhouse that day, mind our own business. No one asked him to come down. You know what I mean? He come down there, and he had a fair dinkum issue with the Banditos, and it was an issue he had with the Banditos. Nothing to do with our chapter. Nothing to do with the boys that were in the clubhouse that day. And obviously, you know, a fight's broke out, and the bloke's lost his life. And you know what I mean? And, yeah, I mean...
What was it like for you going through that court process?
Yeah, for me, it was all new because, like you said, I was a late starter in sort of the world of crime because, obviously, being in the boxing gyms from 13, I mean, you know, we'd make it, you know, being kids, that would, you know, we'd been in our fair share of like, stolen cars or, you know, done whatever, like mucked up, punched on or... But we, back in the day, I was more scared of my dad than I would be the police, you know what I mean? So if bring the cops to our house,
of course,
I would have been more worried about what he's going to do to me than what the Jacks are going to do to me. But, yeah, like you said, being a late starter. So when we went through this and I found myself in remand, it was all new to me. It was like I was like obviously learning the way of the jail, and obviously I had a lot of mates. When I got in there, I had a lot of mates already in there, and boys and crews that I already knew, and so I mean they paved the way for us. You know what I mean? So I did jail a lot easier than you know some other people that go in there not knowing anyone. So the process for me was you know when I look back now it was really just a blur because it was all new. I didn't really know what to expect. I mean, I knew at the end of the day there was going to be, you know, when one of the Coeys turned crown witness, you know what I mean? It was sort of like he put, you know, he was sort of like, you know, he opened his mouth and that's why I got the opportunity to plead to manslaughter to give my Coey, you know, one of my brothers still today, a good friend of mine, a fair run at trial.
Yeah.
A fair run at trial on his own without the Crown witness putting any of my, obviously anything to do with me then had to be taken out of it. So I pled to manslaughter to give him a fair run. And obviously he got...
Yeah, I've seen that you put your hand up and pled guilty.
Yeah, so...
And I thank you for explaining that because I was curious to... Why?
Yeah.
And then obviously, you know what I mean? You were confronted with, you know, a Crown witness, obviously, that makes the allegations and sometimes the allegations in that situation outweigh the not guilty verdict.
And the bloke that went Crown on us, who was once one of my best mates, or one of our brothers, but, you know what I mean? He's one of our brothers and he wore the same patch as us, as me and you, and but when he turned, he really dug it into my Coey, you know, my little brother, and so there was really no opportunity. I mean, we could have ran a trial, but as lawyers, my lawyers rubbed their hands when this bloke went Crown. They were wrapped because it was probably the best outcome for me. But I wouldn't sit there and let him do what he was doing to my little brother, so I just pled to manslaughter to give him a fair run on his own at trial, and then it'd be just him against him. You know what I mean? And then it took out a lot of the evidence they couldn't use then. So you know what I mean? Then it got even an opportunity to get manslaughter as well because the way the Crown was pushing it was someone was going to go down for murder. You know what I mean? So we had to put it. You know, we had to do what we had to do, and you know that's what you know. When you put that patch on, I was still a bandit for 6 years of my sentence too. So, when you wear that patch, you do what you got to do for your brothers, and if you got to put your hand up, you know what I mean. Whatever's going to work, we're in the situation.
Well, if your brother's wounded, it was always in war, wasn't it, mate? You pick him up, you don't leave him behind. You put him over your shoulder and you carry him.
That's right.
You know, and basically, I mean, you know, without going into any more depth about that. That's just how it was.
Yeah,
and, you know, like, wow, you're here today. How long were you sentenced to?
So originally I was sentenced to eight years with a six on the bottom for the manslaughter.
This is for the manslaughter, yeah.
And then during my remand time at MRC Melbourne, Melbourne Remand Centre, I was involved in a jail riot. We had a riot down there, which is a pretty well-known riot down here. In 2016 over the smoking ban. So I got an extra 2 years on top and another year on the bottom. So my sentence ended up going up to 10 with a, I ended up doing 10 with a seven.
How much of that do you have to do in Segro because of the riot?
Yeah, so I done 22 months
in the slot.
I done Charlotte down at Port Phillip. It's probably one of the, I'd say it's the worst. I've been a Barwon slot, and it's the worst slot in the system. Port Phillip, Charlotte. It's I mean, it's broke a lot of blokes down there. I've seen a lot of.
That's what I was about to say. They put you in those places to break you.
Yeah.
You know, like we look at the Supermax and all that in New South Wales. I mean, I did 12 months in Segro in my 6-year sentence. And you know what? It's a tough fucking walk.
Yeah, 100%.
You just got to get used to your own person and you got to, that's it, mate. You know, you'll hear a few yells and screams through the fucking back of the yards. You don't see anyone unless they're coming past you. So it's a very, very lonely, and you're totally controlled. Yeah. They don't want to fucking let you out for show. They don't want to let you get a fucking phone call. They don't want to give you your mail. They want to fuck with your head. They do it.
And they do it. And that's exactly what they do down there. I mean, the portions of food are left.
And if you blow up, they throw the squad in, one for the back door and one for the front door, and they just fucking pump you. And then what are you going to do? You can't fucking – you try and square up. There's a no-win situation.
It's just to belittle you, you know. It's just to take that little bit more manhood away from you. And it's what – like you said, it's like you said, 100% of the max slots are designed to, you know, break you. And it does break a lot of people. And at the same time, for me – It made me stronger. It made, you know what I mean? Like you get that attitude and you go back to your, you know, your ground roots and you think, you know what I mean? You're not gonna fuck me. You know what I mean? You're gonna take more than this to fuck me. Yeah. So emotionally, like now I've been out for 9 months, I'm emotionally it's probably done a lot of negative to me because I find it very hard to get emotional about things now and it makes you a lot harder, but hard in situations where people out here probably don't realize why you've been like that and how you can be so shallow. But when you're in there and you're living, like you said, you're living one out and you only got to get used to yourself and you're getting that one phone call a day. And for a long time in prison, I just turned off from the outside world and my phone calls would be fake, I'd say. You know, like it was a repeated record, you know. You ring up your loved one, how are you, how's the son? How's this? That's good. How's school? Yeah. Okay. Bye bye. It was all just pre-recorded in your brain. You didn't even go back to your sound thinking about what you just spoke about. It's just you turn off from the outside world. And for me, that's how I found, you know, doing my 8 years of jail. That's how I got through it.
You do. You have to become numb. I mean, look, I won't lie. You know, like yourself was on remand. You know, I was looking at 10. I ended up with the 6 and I pled guilty basically as soon as I seen the brief and, you know, it just shut down the case. That's it. Simple as that. I was charged. Got me. Whatever. But, you know, I had this mentality where fuck the world, like I was an angry man.
Yeah.
And, you know, people don't understand. I mean, in that situation that you're in, obviously you're right. You know, if you kick off and you're in. You know, if you're not, then stay the well out of the way. But, you know, when you're upsetting a wing because you got a bad attitude, not so much with the inmates, but with the screws, it doesn't do you no favours with the inmates. Because there's other things going on around you, that, especially blokes that have been there a long time, you know, different things happening here and there, whatever it might be, it's jail.
Yeah.
But by you firing up and you blowing up can cause ramps, you fucking getting tipped, you know, bringing other people down around you without you even knowing, it can become very fucking dangerous for just anyone.
It's true.
You know, and everyone's vulnerable. It don't matter who you are. You fuck shit up. And then for all these young blokes out there listening that, you know, might be thinking that you're hard and going to jail and all the rest of it, I can guarantee you when you step into that yard, you're fucking no one.
Yeah. 100%.
You're no one. Yeah. And if you think that you're going there with this big ego, macho attitude and you fuck the system, you know, I'm not going to cop this, I'm not going to this, you'll cop it. You'll cop it. You'll listen. You'll do what you're told. Yeah. You will do it, because if you don't do it, you won't just copper from the screws. You're upsetting the whole process of what goes on. That's all I'm going to say. It's just as simple as that. You don't upset the apple cart.
It was a very political place.
Very much so.
Yeah, 100%. A lot of people in there for themselves, and it's not. Yeah, I mean, I've seen that with the MRC riots, and you know, it started off as 300 prisoners and down to 80 of us real quick. You know what I mean? But
can we touch on that? Because what was it like for you? Being in that, you know, you're looking at a big whack. So your class is a long-term inmate.
Yeah.
You're not there for the short-term or a drunk's lagging, as they say. You know, this is going to sort of shape, I guess, the rest of your time on what blokes think of you. Maybe, you know what I mean? How you end up doing your jail after. I mean, so much can happen in a riot situation. You know, you don't know what's going to come from left or right. You just got to fucking go forward and do your best.
That's right.
How was it for you?
Yeah. You know what it was? When I look back now, again, it's just a blur because it was all new to me. So when the smoking ban came in, you know what I mean? It was pretty simple. It was just meant to be a friendly protest. If anything, the officers at the MRC down here, they're the ones that caused it to go to where it did. It was only going to be a protest. You know what I mean?
Just have a sit down in the yard, just no one wanted to go back in or something.
No one mustered up. Everyone refused to muster up, and 11 o'clock muster. And it was only when the screws sort of retreated out of the jail that the fences started coming down. This and that. There was no officers in the jail, so they actually retreated out the front. And it took me,
what they bailed from the jail. The squad didn't come in.
Yeah, no, the squad come in. The squad's the one that bailed. So they bailed from the jail. And
oh right.
Once the prisoners like. It was too much force of the prisoners, so they got out of there, and then they've ended up on the outside of the jail arguing with Victorian police who's going to. So they argued for 4 hours to decide who was going to go in and take it back over. I mean, the riot went up going for 15 hours.
Wow, so, right. This is interesting. Yeah. I didn't know this.
Yeah, so this is what
really
the,
interesting.
This is what the public don't know. You know, I mean, if it was handled, I mean, if the Toggies come in and done what they had to do right from the start, I don't think it would have went any further. But because they've retreated, well, we all know what jail's like. Imagine with no officers there. So when they say all these millions of dollars of damage, I mean, to me, it was like an insurance job gone wrong. You know what I mean?
So they let us go nuts just to fucking rejuvenate.
They let us go nuts and then reported in the papers how much we've cost taxpayers. Well, really, if the corrections were doing the right job, though, there's no way. I mean, I couldn't see that ever happening again. You couldn't see it ever happening again because the way they got, at one stage during that, for a solid 6 hours of that riot, there wasn't one officer inside that prison. They were all at the front of the car park.
That's dangerous.
Where else in the world dangerous. Has that happened and where would it happen? I mean, riots kick off all the time. Mm. They defend their prison.
There's been massive riots in New South Wales, Queensland, and I tell you now, the squads. I mean, I just spent 2 months at the R&R this year, and it was just after the riots because of COVID.
Yeah,
and you know, you can still see what you know where blokes had climbed to the roofs and fucking written their names on walls and shit had gotten smashed and but the damage that was caused, you go, wow, it had to have been full on, you know what I mean? But in saying that, the squad never took a backward step either. Yeah. You know, it got to the point where blokes were in the cages, in the yards, throwing sheets and towels ready to threaten to jump and neck themselves if they didn't back out of the yard and stop gassing everyone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like there's in New South Wales, you won't get away with it, right, mate? Yeah. The squad will come through there and pump you. Yeah. You will get pumped.
And I mean, since that I've never been back to MRC, but they've had a massive upgrade. They've even got fake grass in there.
I'm sure they have.
They've even got the fake grass in there that waters itself from underneath. I mean, they've come out with a mad insurance claim.
No,
they've upgraded the jail to the way that people reckon it's off its head there now. It's unbelievable. So
how were you tipped? Like from that. Just so our listeners can understand, because, I mean, obviously we all know what the word riot means and stuff, but there's a process after that to how you're then taken away from that prison and how you're treated.
Yeah.
You and I both know there was nothing good that's going to happen to you after that. Let's talk about that because I think it's important to people understand how fucking full on it becomes after something so it is traumatic for everyone.
So the, obviously the riot, so Victorian police come in with the officers and they get control back of the prison. And obviously we all get handcuffed, cable tied.
Police are allowed into the jail.
Yeah, the Victorian police actually come in and like the riot squad actually came in.
Wow, I've never heard of that
before. Yeah, that's what I mean. I mean, that's how out of control it was and how far it was let go that the police had to come in with their riot cars and they took control with their bangers and they took control of the jail again.
Wow.
And I've ended up in a two-out cell, as you know how big they are. We're talking about 2x4. There's no running water in the jail. There's no toilet left in the jail. Everything's been smashed. Every cell's been lit up, smashed. There's no windows on the cells, just the bars. So we end up with eight of us in a two-out. And this wasn't just me. This was every prisoner. So because there was hardly any running, any cells that they could lock the doors, most of the doors had been taken off. So any cell they could find, they'd lock you in. And there was eight of us in one. And, I mean, that last...
Was this all just one wing, bro? Was this all just one wing?
No,
or was it a whole jail?
The whole
jail.
So you had, like, three... There was only probably one yard that wasn't affected. That was C yard. You had, like, B yard and A yard that were affected. And so you had probably... Four, five.
Could you get to each other?
Yeah.
Like, could you get to the yards?
Yes,
or
yes.
Was it like Sydney where you can't get between the yards and jails up here?
B yard and A yard become one. Everything become one. And by the end, everyone got into C yard. And blokes that were still locked in, because obviously there was 300 prisoners that didn't muster up, but there was a lot of prisoners that did get, when everyone obviously refused to muster up, prisoners did get locked in their cells because they were at their cells or whatever. You know what I mean? So blokes did end up in their cells, and then doors end up getting cut off. So when we all got taken down and put in these cells, I found myself in a 2 hour with eight blokes, and that was the same with most people that were locked in. No one had less than six blokes with them, because there was nowhere to put us. There was no food for 2 days, no running water. Blokes had to piss like in this broken toilet.
Fuck, you wouldn't have been able to sleep, nothing.
And we had probably that much water in the cells, like at our shoe level, because everything was busted, so everything was flooded. And, I end up cracking up there and having a crack at one of the officers, and I end up getting, like, shipped out there. The toggies come down from Port Phillip, you know, with their riot gear on, and barge us out in the cell and end up putting me on my ass and handcuff me and take me out. Yeah. And so that's when I went to Port Phillip to Charlotte, and that's when I started my 22-month slot, you know what I mean? But yeah, nah.
And specifically, were you treated like shit because of that?
Oh, 100%.
Like for that first period 100%. Or first 6 months or the whole time you're in there, were you absolutely given fuck all respect?
So for the first 3 months after coming from the MRC to Port Phillip, I didn't even have shoes. They tried to give me the prison shoes, which I refused to wear, and because they obviously took my runners because they were involved in a crime, was obviously will charge with the riot. Yeah. So they took my shoes. I didn't have shoes there. Obviously all my clothes, jocks, socks, and that were destroyed in the riot. Got none of them back, and obviously my family and that were trying to send.
And just before you go any further, let's explain that, because a lot of people don't understand. When you go to jail, especially these days, you've got to pay for your own undies.
Yep.
You used to get a care pack when you went in there, your clothes. You used to get undies, some socks. No, you get a pair of boob shoes or a pair of thongs.
Yeah.
You get no undies.
Yeah.
You've got these scraggly fucking greens or browns or blues.
Yeah.
And they've been worn by 100 blokes before you.
Yeah.
And shirts that are generally ripped, torn, and whatever, maybe a jumper if you're lucky.
Yeah.
So what you do in a long-term situation is your people will put in money and you know, you purchase your own goods of what you can off the buy-up and stuff like that. Nothing flash, but enough to... So by you losing everything means you've lost everything.
Yeah, our everything. Yeah, so everything, no socks, no jocks. I mean, you're washing your socks, the socks that you come there with, and your jocks, you're washing them in the sink with your shampoo because you've got nothing else to wash them with. So I've done 3 months in the spine, which is a bit of the high security unit you go to before you go into the main unit where you get a TV and that. So you're in the spine. There's no TV. There's no radio, no nothing. You know what I mean? It's just dead silence. And obviously, all us lads, you know, be at the door yelling out to each other, talking to each other. That'd be our only entertainment. And obviously, you know, giving the screws hell, but obviously you get it back too. And obviously, like I said, the food, the food. While you're in that spine, but you don't even get a buy up. You don't even get to buy canine. No, all you can buy is pens and paper and stuff like that, or envelopes. You can't actually buy food. So you actually starve down there for 3 months in the spine. And you're only meant to do 28 days down there. I've done 3 months. I played up a little bit. And obviously then you get into the main unit of the high security unit slot. And I mean, it's not much better, but the food's a little bit better. You get a $60 buy up a week. I become a.
It's livable.
Yeah, it's livable. It's like it's doable, and like I said, you become headstrong in there. And I mean, any situation you put blokes like us in, we're gonna make it work, aren't we? So you make it work, yeah. But it's not something I want to go back to. You know what I mean, regardless of
not at all,
not regardless of how easy or how uneasy you do it, but it's not life, is it? It's not living. And you look back now, and you probably don't realize how much damage the solitary confinement does to you until you get out. And like now, I find myself, I hate being in confined spaces where that never really worried me before. But for me to be in a confined space or to be in a bathroom with the door shut because it's confined, it reminds me of a cell. You know what I mean? You got to shower, toilet.
Yep.
It's the same sort of thing. And not that.
It's trauma, isn't it? Yeah. It's triggered trauma.
And you don't even have to go through trauma in the prison to have that reaction when you get out. It's just. Because you've done it for so long and it's not a place you want to be, and then you put yourself in that situation again. I mean, even going to the shitter, going to the toilet with the door shut, and you're in that little, you're in that little fine spot, and you start thinking again, this I've not been in before, you know what I mean? The body. So, yeah, there's a lot of things there that...
Did you find too, bro, just to touch on it while you... Because I think it's really valid what you're saying. For me, I experienced, not so much now, it's taken me a lot of years, but when I got home, my family couldn't work out why I'd come home or come in and go straight to my room.
Yeah.
I had a TV in my bedroom, but I couldn't come out of my bedroom to sit with my kids. Yeah. I couldn't come out of my bedroom to relax with my wife. So don't get me wrong, I never want to go back in a cell again. Yeah. But that mentality of I sleep in there, it's my place.
Yep.
I'm okay with that. People go, how do you live out of a semi? You know, well, I can do it. It's confined space, but it's livable, you know?
Yeah.
Did you find that yourself, bro? Like being able to...
Yeah, a lot of that's similar to me. You know what I mean? I can just... Yeah, I like to just kick back, watch TV, but like, I find it hard to... after being in jail, I find it hard to relax. I find it hard to stay in one spot. It's like I feel like I'm missing out on something. Like... For me to stay home and just stay home, it's like I'm missing out on something. But it's not even to do anything. Like it's not even I want to go do anything. It's just like obviously I've been diagnosed with ADHD, so I mean that's why I'm so big on my training. And the biggest thing that jail's done for me, but it's probably a good thing and a bad thing. It's a routine, and I can't break that routine.
Structured routine.
I mean, in prison, prison causes that. I mean. But obviously, going back to my boxing career too, that was structured as well. So I've just had it embedded. But now, after coming out of prison, that's like a main. If something doesn't go my way, like if my work day doesn't finish at 8 hours and I can't get to the gym at 5 o'clock and I can't do that 2 hour session and then come home, have my dinner on the exact time and go to bed the exact time, if
something goes out of whack. My wife just starts to get it now. Yeah,
if something goes out of whack, well, I mean 5 minutes, 10 minutes.
The whole day's fucked.
And that's it. I'm in a bad zone now, and someone else is gonna have a bad day because I'm having a bad day. And
I'm exactly the same. Yeah. 18 years with my wife, you know, and she gets it because I'm type 2 bipolar, ADHD, PTSD as well.
Yeah, same here,
and you know, even work. They tell me to be in there at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
I'm there at 4 o'clock in the morning. If you're not loaded and it got me out of there by fucking 7 and I'm chained up to go fucking, 12-hour trip, fuck, I'm pissed, man, and I'm angry because I know where I need to be at every certain time. I know where I need to stop. Yeah. I know what I've got to do. I've got to have my coffee.
Yep.
I've got to have had a shower. I'm got to have my teeth brushed. I've got to be ready to roll.
Yeah.
And people go, mate, chill out. Yeah. You don't get it. Yeah. You don't get it. You know, like if it doesn't happen
–
like people say, you know, you gotta relax and let things take us to just go with the flow.
Yeah,
I try to do the best I can.
Yeah.
But if a spanner's thrown in the works, God help everyone.
Yeah, I'm the same, brother. I'm the same. And
it's not something that I like to do.
Yeah, me too. And you know what? And I can see what I'm doing, I can see how it affects people around me, but I just can't let it go. Like it's gotta be done on that time, or it's gotta be done here that way, or it's obviously from coming out of prison and obviously everything, nothing. Like when I look back on prison, when I try to explain to people about prison, I'm trying to tell them it's like deja vu every day. Every day is the same. The next day is the same. Your phone calls are the same time. your yard time's the same time, your lockup time's the same time, you're watching the same shit on TV every day. I mean, I remember being in prison and the AFL footy season would wrap up and finish. It was like, it was so depressing. And I don't even like watching.
What do I do for the year?
I don't even like watching footy, but at least when you know the footy season started in March, April, and you know time it finished, September, October, you knew your year was nearly done.
It's a chunk off your set.
That's right. You knew that year was done. Right. But then that drag from October to December would take so
back
long.
Back through to March again, bro.
Just because footy wasn't on. And I don't even like watching the footy. I haven't watched a game since I've been out, but it was just that structure of knowing that footy was on at 7 o'clock, the bounce would be at 7:30, the game would finish by 11, 10:30, you'd be asleep, next day starts. Yeah. That would be all the way to October. Just stupid little things like that that I don't even know how.
I found personally lock-ins the worst.
Yeah.
Blokes used to love lock-ins because they just kicked back. Yeah. I hated the fucking cell. When I knew that, you know, I was standing at the door waiting for it to get fucking unhitched, mate, I'd be sitting there chomping at the bit, ready for go. If I must, let's go, get me out in that yard.
Sorry, I'd be pacing,
when they'd go, lock in today, boys, and I'd be like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
I'd be like pacing up and down the cell, fuck. Like I would lose my shit, you know. And I got to the point where I was only two out for a little while because what I did do is I bunged it up.
Yeah.
I was a medical one out, bro. Yeah. I had to be a medical one out because I'd become too aggressive, and I just couldn't have a celly, which suited me fine because having done, which you'd appreciate, that amount of time in Segre or the slot, you don't want to sell. Yeah. You can't.
Yeah, that's right.
You just can't adjust to somebody else being in that program and you're – even this time, going into the R&R, and I hadn't been in jail since 2014. So – I had no intention of going back, you know what I mean? And then all of a sudden I'm pinched, I'm thrown back in there for something for fucking ever ago. I had this mentality of just, fuck, it was COVID. So we had a 21 day lockdown, right? Yeah. You go in there, they're just thrown in with two out, like, you don't get out at all. Yeah. You're in a one out cell that they've created with a mattress on the floor where you shit and piss over the top of someone else's mattress. It's putrid, it's disgusting. Now, you don't pick your celly, as you know. You know what I mean? If he shits, snores, farts as a chat, it's on.
Yeah.
I'm not copping it. You know what I mean? And you can't. And it just doesn't, I can't do it. I can't do the two out thing. Nah, if you were me 5'8" and I knew you and we knew each other well, it'd still even be hard, but I can't do it.
I can't do it either. I've done it for a bit. We got tipped from a B-rate in jail back to a maximum, me and a close brother of mine that's still in there. We got put in a two out together, and we said the only way we're going 2 hours is with each other. You know what I mean? Other than that, I've really never been two out with anyone. But like you said, down here too at Port Phillip, when you do a long period in the high security slot, they always keep you one out. And obviously being involved in the clubs and that, you're more intended to get a one out, and obviously they're a little bit, you know, with putting you in with someone else. So, they're right on to that, or down here in Melbourne now with the prisons. It's all obviously...
Oh, 100% intel's massive.
When I first got locked up, a lot of the yards were together and a lot of us could all run out together, but it's all segregated now and every club's in their own yard. And, it's not
a life. And I'll honestly say that, and I'm a proud, strong man, and I'm going to say it's not a life, it's not a place you want to be, and I want this message and this podcast to come across to inspire young people through both of us here today, especially yourself. This is your story that, you know, is on the clink, that there's nothing tough about it. You know what I mean? What's tough is how you've come out. What's tough is how you are changing your life. What's tough is how you're being a present father.
Yeah.
Giving love, accepting love, you know, having a partner, and enjoying your life. You're working, you're a hard working man. Let's start talking about the positive things now, because I think that, you know, it's important to touch on what it is that you were and went through to what it is today that's inspiring others. Yeah. And you being you have a pretty big following.
Yeah. I mean, I just want like kids to know too, growing up, you don't have to be in a gang, you don't have to be a gangster to stick by the rules. I mean, I still stand by the code of silence. I still stand by my rules. I still don't like the jacks. I never will. You know what I mean? I don't like them. You know what I mean? I don't like what they're about. I don't like I don't like them coming down hard on what they're doing, the bikie clubs. And you'll never see me. You'll never see me putting someone like you'll never see me lag. And I know a lot of blokes turn their life around and become, you know, dogs. That's not me. You know what I mean? I just want to turn my life around, as in do the right thing, go to work every day, be there for my son for the next however long, you know, I live for,
and just do you,
and just do me. I mean, I don't need to have a patch on my back. I don't need to get out there and think I'm a sick cunt and do stupid shit. You know what I mean? You're not going to see me in a jack shop lagging. You're not going to see me fucking ever liking the jacks. That's not what this whole turnaround's about. It's about me knowing that as long as I'm on this earth and I'm alive, I'm going to be there for my son. There's not going to be an 8-year period or a 10-year period or even a 2-year period that I'm going back in there, you know, with a whole lot of blokes I don't want to be around. You know what I mean? And be away from,
bless you,
and
brother,
be away from my loved ones. I think that's the big message that a lot of kids are hanging around with, crews and gangs and street gangs and whatever it is you want to do, because they feel like they got to fit in, or they don't want to be looked at as a dog. Or some of the toughest blokes I know and staunchest blokes haven't got a criminal record.
Yes.
And I would trust them before I trust a lot of these other blokes that do end up in jail. You know what I mean? Because, hey,
yes,
I tell you now that the jail population is a 50-50 and the boneyards are as big as the mainstreams. So that says a lot there. You know what I mean? So you don't have to be tough to end up in there. You don't have to be tough to end up in there, because a lot of blokes are in there in protection. And obviously, you know, they've done the wrong thing, you know, to end up in there. So, you know what I mean? They're wasting their life. So that's what these young kids have to realize. And a lot of these young vulnerable kids will end up in protection, because they'll go in there, they'll get a hard time, and the screws don't give a fuck about them. They'll put them in protection because they're vulnerable and because they're weak. You know what I mean? So, I mean, it's not...
And they'll do the whole duty of care card.
Yeah, it's not the place you want to be. So just, I mean, kids got to understand it's not a good place. And just because you're tough out here and you can pull a shiv out here, in there you might be getting the shiv pulled on you. And if that happens, you might end up in protection if you're a vulnerable kid. And
or you pull the shiv and there's 20 shivs coming at you from every angle. You know what
I mean?
So
you're gonna get turned out. I mean, it doesn't matter who you are. It doesn't matter who... I mean,
you'll get got.
My whole jail sentence, I didn't give a shit if you're a bloke in there stealing cars, or you're in there on four knocks, I'd shake your hand. I'd show the same. When you're in prison, you're wearing green, you're all the same. Everyone's the same. You're all worth $140 a month. No one's better than anyone else. I don't give a fuck who you think you are right here, or now who you've become in there. We're all the same. So I treated the young 19-year-old kid that was in there for stealing the car the same as I treated a bloke that's in there for doing three knocks. To me, everyone's equal, you know what I mean? There's no, you know what I mean? I walked around with my head high, I look after myself, you know what I mean? But there's other young kids in there that didn't, you know what I mean? And I would have been always the first one to look out for them young kids and, you know, put them in the right
path. I think that's a very valid point.
Yeah.
And the thing is too, Johnny, there's blokes in there that aren't bad people.
That's right.
They just make a bad choice at a bad time in their life.
Yeah.
And the consequences are jail.
Yeah.
And they're not fit for jail. They're not. It's not built, you know, and you can't help but have compassion for some of those people. And you do. You sort of keep an eye on them just out of respect, because you know in your heart, this poor bugger's just fucking doing his best. He's not a smart ass. He's not bridging up. He's not pee thieving. He's not a fucking dog. He's just a young bloke trying to do his best to get through his whack. And it's very common, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, you don't... You know, like people like turn my life around, whatever. You know, if something was to happen, I end up back in there, I'm going to look after myself again. I'm going to do it the same way I've done the last time. But it's not life. That's not life. You know what I mean? It's not about people say, oh, yeah, but I'll do jail on my head. I'll do it easy. I don't give a fuck about going to jail. It's not about not giving a fuck about going. I mean, if I had to protect my family or something had to happen, you know, it would happen. And I'll go back in there and I'll stand on my own 2 feet 100%. Like I did. But the end of the day, the story that we're trying to get here, and you try to get through with your podcast, and is that you don't want to waste them years. You know what I mean? Every year I was in there, I'm thinking, is my grandmother going to pass away? Is my dad going to pass away? I mean, everyone's getting older now. I've missed this birthday. I've missed this wedding. Every year you're in there, you're missing something, and then like obviously the worst thing that can happen to a prisoner is lose loved ones. And you won't get to the funeral, because if you're a high security prisoner, they're not going to let you go. And it's as simple as that.
No chance.
Yeah, I mean, no chance at all. And These are the things that you want to look at before you go in there. And these are the things that I think about today that, I mean, I'm still the same bloke. I'm still going to protect my family and my loved ones to the end. You know what I mean? And if that
100%.
That causes me to end up on the wrong side of the law again, well, that's not a choice I'm going out to make. But that's someone that puts me in that position. That will happen. But that's not the life I want. I don't want to be in jail. I want to be out here with my son. I want to be out here with my partner, my dad, my mom, my grandmother, and my mates. You know what I mean? That's what these.
I think the thing is too, Johnny, they don't realise that, you're getting a sentence, but your loved ones are doing the jail 100%, with you.
And they're the ones that do
now, let's put it in perspective. You know, like they're raising our children. Yeah. The parents, your parents, like you say, my parents are old. They're getting old. Or my dad personally, I could get a call at any time, yeah. You know, and if anything was to happen to me and I went back for whatever reason, God forbid, knowing that I'm going back and there's no way in the world I'm ever going to get that chance to hug him and say goodbye, 100%. Dad. I love you. Thanks. 100%. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like I yeah. know that that's every possibility yeah. in my situation at this moment. Now, do I want that? Absolutely not. No. Do I feel bad about that? Fuck no,
yeah.
I do.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, especially when you've not gone out of your way to do anything yeah. in the way of a crime yeah. or committed, you've just unfortunately been dragged through the ringer for whatever reasons.
Yeah.
This is something that people need to consider, yeah. you know, because, you know, as your son did, my middle son was born while I was in custody, missed out on the first 4 years, 5 years of his life. Yeah. You know, he's now 12. He's an A student. He's doing exceptionally well in his sports and academics. But for me, every birthday, every football match, yeah. every accolade yeah. that I miss out yeah. on, like this week, he had his end of year. The end of year, moving into his high school, you know, and it was a proud moment for him. You know, yeah. he did very well. I couldn't be there because I was at work. Yeah. Now, I was doing something for my family yeah. to provide, and that hurt yeah. because it took me back to going. I missed out on so much of this young man's. I owe him yeah. to be there. Yeah. No matter what, yeah. I promise
yeah.
to not
yeah.
ever not leave him or not be there at something I could be at. You know what I mean?
I know how you feel with that.
And these yeah. are the things that people don't consider. Yeah. That hurts them, yeah. you know? Yeah. So not only are we the ones saying, all right, okay, we've done the whack. We're like, but what about our kids? Yeah. What have they had to yeah. go through missing their dads, you know? Yeah. Or their parents, if they're young people that don't have kids, but the parents that lose their sons or daughters yeah. through these actions, especially these young ones that are getting whacks.
Yeah.
That are big whacks for, yeah. you know, murder for a knife yeah. or, you know, involved and in serious crime.
Everyone loses. I mean, there's no winners. I mean, the young kid going to prison, he's losing, his family's losing, and obviously the family on the other end that's lost, that ends up someone passes away, they're losing too. Everyone loses, and it's the families that are suffering. So it's not the, you know.
And you're not gangster. Nah. You're not tough. Nah.
I mean, what?
No one gives a fuck about you when you're in there. You don't walk in and go, oh, you're that sick cunt.
But it's everyone, they've got to understand, no one gives a fuck about, like, these kids that get out and brag about prison. I go, the way I look at it is, for me, it was a downgrade. It was a very big downgrade in life because I'm going in there now and I'm being told what to do by a scumbag wearing a blue uniform. He's telling me when to strip.
Living in shit, grotty, filthy conditions.
He's telling me when to piss, when to shit. He's telling me, to strip now, go to bed now, you're getting locked in now, you're not coming in the yard today, we're locking you down. I mean, anyone that thinks...
No phone calls, no mail.
That's right, you're not getting phone calls, you're not getting mail. Anyone that thinks they're a man and they're a tough cunt because they go to jail and they get treated like that by the blokes in blue, now, that's not life to me. And someone that was living a good life out here before I went in there and obviously being who I was in the club, this and that, and then going in there, it was a big downgrade being told, take your clothes off, put these shit greens on, we're not giving you mail, you're not getting a phone call today. And what do you do? I mean, you can tee off on them, but you tee off on them, you end up back in the hole. You know what I mean? So they win again.
Exactly.
It's a losing door. It's a losing cycle. So these young kids that want to be tough cunts and want to end up in there and just so they can say, I've been in the jar, well, if that's what you call being tough, well, you got the wrong idea of tough. Go to a boxing gym, go to a kickboxing gym go touch up the...
See how tough you are.
Yeah, go touch up the toughest bloke in there and then I'll give you credit and I'll say you are tough. Because ending up in jail
for
being a fuckwit, that's not tough. You know what I mean?
No, that's not. And the reality is everybody says yes, chief, no chief.
Yeah, that's it.
Doesn't matter.
That's right.
You just do it. Yeah. You have to. Yeah. You toe the line. Yeah. As we say in there, you either kick along with it or you do your jail rock. Yeah. Because at the end of the day, at some stage in your sentence, you're going to accept that this is the only way I can do it. You're not succumbing to their way saying, I'm kissing your ass and you got me.
Yeah.
You got to stay strong in the mind, but you got to play the game, and the game is along with it and do as you have to.
Yeah.
Sweet, Chief. Yeah. No worries, that's Chief. Right. Chief, phone call, please, Chief. Gate, please, Chief. Yeah. Simple things, but that's how it is.
Right. And I'd much rather be out here eating when I want to eat, going when I want to go somewhere, doing what I want to do, spending time with my family. That, to me, that's gangster. That's being a man, doing things how when I want to do them because I want to do it, not because I'm being told to do it. So, I mean, that's the best.
Speaking about gangster, you are a fucking true gangster. And I say that with respect and in proud. The way you have come out, bro, you're bouncing on 2 feet, and you're still doing your best. Yeah. You're still doing your best. Let's not fool everybody and make out like you come out fucking flying, because you're not. You're a hardworking man.
100%.
You're dealing with your own mental states. Yeah. You still, like you said, you're struggling. So, you know, that in itself is a challenge every day. You know, your family see that, so therefore it creates challenges around your family adapting, you adapting. But you're also working, and you're working in an environment where, you know, you once again have seniorities above you that you have to answer to, I guess, at some stage. You know, you're in a good position. But at the end of the day, you're creating a better life and leading from the front and showing your son and proving to yourself that, you know, life is good outside. Yeah. Life is good. Yeah. Let's talk about that because I think it's really important to where Johnny is today.
Yeah, so, I mean, I've come out and, I mean, I've got a leg up from the boys down at the Union, the CFMEU. They gave me a gig down there on one of their sites as a shop steward. You know what I mean? I can't thank them.
What's a shop steward?
So, we oversee the site, and we're there for the lads, there for the boys, and there for their work, their rides.
Okay.
And,
like a delegate?
Yeah, a delegate. That's exactly what I am, a delegate. So we do the HSR, the health and safety of the site, and we're pretty much just there for the boys, just to make sure, you know, the bosses are toeing the line And the workplace is safe, and everything's there they need, women's toilets, men's toilets, the first aid rooms, everything's up to scratch. So we're just there for the safety of the men and women on the sites, and any needs they need, like if it may, you know, it could be anything that, you know, we're trained. So, you know, if they've got personal issues going on, they want to come in the office, and, you know, we get blokes all the time, they might need to leave early. Their wife is sick, they're going through problems, breakdowns. We'll make sure, you know, they get their pay and they get to go home and spend time with their family.
Yeah. Do you guys also too have to do like mental health first aid and stuff like that to be able to assist in times? You're there to actually genuinely give a fuck about people and their employment and their safety around going home each day to their loved ones, coming to work, feeling good. Yeah. You know, not feeling that they're a burden, I suppose, to the work side, or anybody's being bullied and pressured into things.
Yeah. I mean,
it's a good job.
It's a good job. You know, I mean, and it's a good opportunity. It's not you know, something you can just walk into. I mean, it's, you know, the boys down there give me opportunity. And, like, you know, obviously, you know, I have to prove myself too. Obviously, I come from a fitter and turner background, so I come from a trade background anyway. So I know my way around a site, and, you know, it's not just like, I've just walked on there straight out of prison, don't know anything about trade. I've worked in trades my whole life. And so I've gone there, but I love the job, and, you know, I love knowing we're there for the boys and the girls on the side, and you know, we're helping people. You know what I mean? At the same time as you're getting paid, I mean, it's a good job. We're there for people, and we're helping people along the way as well. And, you know what I mean? But I can't thank the union enough for giving me the opportunity.
And I think that the reality is you've got to have a heart.
Yeah.
Because if you're a heartless person and you're going in a position like that, no one's going to respect you. You know, it's not about being tough. Yeah. On the work site, I'm a man's man. Yeah. I want to know that I can look at you and say, Johnny Walker's a bloke I can go to who understands and come in. And if I need to sit down and just fucking bury my head in between my hands and have a cry and let it out, that, you know, Johnny will be listening. And then, you know, Johnny will put that arm on my shoulder and say, brother, I got you. Let's get through today, man. I'll put you in contact with the right chain of people that we can get you through this. That right there, you have to have some sort of heart and compassion. And I feel that that's a really good thing for someone like yourself to come out of such a terrible situation and doing, you know, a jail for if I can, a violent crime, you know, that most people sort of go, that's terrible. Yeah, okay, it was terrible, and we're not here to talk it up or anything, but what I am here to do is talk up today and the man that you are, and I think it's so important that people understand the challenges and the changes for someone to find redemption, and this is what the podcast is about, is to inspire others. You're not, we're not here to sit here and say, go out and start writing statements, be a weak cunt, fucking all this sort of shit. But what we are trying to say is there's a better way to live your life to not have to be involved in that sort of stuff. Don't even be around that style where you're vulnerable to even start to be a part of 100%. Those stages where you're getting put in positions of crown witnesses or committing crimes or, you know, go and be a tough bloke and provide for your family. Yeah.
That's it. And that's what it comes down to. You know what I mean? I got a lot of good mates now that are still outlaw bikers. We've got a lot of good mates, you know what I mean, they're doing all sorts of things. But, you know what I mean, that's if that's what they want to do, that's their world. And I love them. You know what I mean? They're still my good mates. They always will be. But it's just that it's what's there for me, and it's just what I know the way I do things is, you know what I mean, I don't want to end back up in jail, you know what I mean, for, you know, someone else's issue or even maybe my own issue. But, you know what I mean? Like, I want to be here for my son, you know what I mean? End of the day, you know, I had to look in his eyes for 8 years every time he comes to that visit center. And for me, that's not being a man. When my kid has to leave after a two-hour visit and he's got tears in his eyes because he's not going to see his dad for a week.
Let's not talk about the shit they go through to come in and see you, the searching, the intimidation by the schools, the way that the families are treated. They're not treated with respect and politely. They're treated like absolute dog shit.
If you want to put your family
shit
through that, then, yeah, you go be a gangster, go to jail. You know what I mean? But I don't want to – I mean, I don't want to put my family through that. So, for me, now doing what I'm doing out here now, working – I mean, I'm working six days a week. I'm working more than I probably ever thought I would be, you know what I mean? But at the same time, you know what I mean? I'm
with purpose.
With purpose. I'm not looking over my shoulder. There's no shit goes going on. Then, you know, even when I was bored, I never into shit goes. But obviously, when you put something on your back and other people might be doing shit goes, you're looked upon like that too. So now I go to work.
100%.
I come home. I still got my group of mates. I still got, you know what I mean? And like we said before, I love my time down at the club. I'm telling you, it was the best times of my life. You know what I mean? It's just
absolutely.
It was the best times of my life, and the brothers. And,
it's not like that these days, but Johnny, that's not. Yeah. It's different. Yeah. We, you know, if I can say it respectfully, we got the best of what was.
I mean, it's hard from now too, with the laws that are coming in, and it's just hard from the live now. Like, my hat goes out to them. Like the things they do to the outlaw bikies, and then. Or, you know, even armed robbers and that are robbing banks again 18, 20 years, and then a pedophile will get a CCO. Like, I can't.
Oh, bro, there was a bloke up just recently, you know, on the Sunshine Coast, completely guilty of sexually intercourse with a bloody 12-year-old girl and given a fucking suspended sentence. Like, are you kidding me?
Telling me, like,
go and have a fucking coffee. Yeah. Go and have a coffee with a club brother and you pinch for consort and then next minute you're locked up.
Like that.
Indefinitely.
They're treating these bikies worse than a pedophile. I mean, but they're good blokes, mate. They're wearing a patch. So what? These pedophiles are going out of their way to destroy a kid's life and they're getting fucking CCO. And the worst thing for them, they can't live near a school. Oh, fuck off.
But let's not talk about the suicide rate that they... You know, like I'm a survivor of sexual abuse as well, you know, and I had attempts on my life growing up. And I know that there's many else who are survivors that aren't here because they couldn't deal with it.
Yeah.
So not only does it just have that, they've got away with it. They've taken the innocence of someone's life. They've then caused death for someone who can no longer deal with the traumas and the pain and the heartache. Yeah. How's that not murder?
Yeah.
If you bring that upon somebody, like there's a chain of command in the industries that we work in. If somebody's killed in a truck accident or somebody's killed on site, they go back through. Who's responsible for what?
Yeah.
True?
Yeah, that's right.
So therefore, there is a hierarchy, chain of command, and someone will be held responsible. And this is the ways that they've done it to make safer work environments and people take ownership.
Yeah.
Yet you can have a scenario where someone can destroy someone's life through their actions and then just get a slap on the wrist and protect it in jail. We could sit here for hours.
It comes from high above. I mean, look, I haven't got much respect for the courts and the judges.
Nah.
I mean, they all look after each other, and I think that's why an armed robber will get 18 years and a pedophile will get CCO. But anyway, that's another story. But
another story for another day. Are you getting back into your training, brother? Yeah. Because I think that, you know, like, you've got so much to give back, so much to give back, bro. And, you know, you're not fucking done. Yeah. You got plenty in there.
So, like I said, for mental health more than anything, I mean, training for me has never been about a physical look or to what I look like in the mirror or anything like that. For me, it's all mental. Like I said, if I don't get to the gym at 5 o'clock on a weeknight, I mean, my mental health goes downhill, and it's bad to say because it shouldn't be like that, but it's just mentally the way I'm trained. I've got a box every night, so Monday to Friday I'll box. Somewhere along that way I'll try to fit in a couple of weight sessions a week. But it's like I said, it's all mental. It's not because I'm jumping on the scales and want to see if I'm up or down or if I put on an inch of muscle. It's got nothing to do with it. It's all mental for me. Today, Sunday night, and for me to get Sunday night, and now I've done my 2 weight sessions a week and I've done my 5 boxing sessions, I can sleep happily on a Sunday night, you know what I mean? And then start again Monday, you know what I mean?
Have you done your second session today? Because if you haven't, I'm going to let you go shortly.
You know what?
I'm grateful, brother. I'm grateful you're giving me your time.
Today I actually went for a massage and I thought, you know what? So I'm going to have a rest day, you know what I mean? So
good. Oh, thank you for that. Yeah, I appreciate that because I don't want to leave you. You're doing a good deed here, sharing your story to the world, but I don't want to upset you home.
No, it's all good. I planned today to work like this. Went for a massage. I knew I was going to do the podcast.
Oh, bless you, brother.
I want to
ask you something, and it's something that's very important because each of the guests that come on the Clink, we always leave on a very positive note, but I try to leave with something inspiring that you'd like to say to people listening out there, and whether it be a word, a paragraph or a sentence, something that's important to you that, you know, you wake up each day and in your mind gives you the strength and courage to continue and to do the right things and just stay, I guess, positive and well, like you say, with your training, you know, that's for your mental health. Yeah. I'm the same, bro. I take me joggers in a truck and I'll still go and run every chance I can get, you know, to a gym. Wherever I pull up in a city, I'll find a gym, you know, and I join World Gym for that purpose. Yep. And I vowed never to join it, but it has a purpose for my mental health. Johnny Walker, for a man that's walked the path that you have and, you know, very, very, you know, interesting life, I truly have the utmost respect for where you're heading and the path that you were. It's a tough, tough path. And what would you say to anybody out there that's struggling right now?
The biggest thing, like the way I think in the morning, like you get up in the morning and you do your fucking best at whatever you're doing and you don't make no excuses. You know what I mean? That's the most simplest way I can put it. You get up in the morning and whatever it is, if it's work, if it's training, if it's going to school, if it's playing, whatever you're doing, you do your fucking best at it and you don't let anyone bring you down as long as you know you've done your best at it and just stop making excuses. You know what I mean? Whether that be, you got to lose weight or you want to put on weight or you want to work longer hours, you want to work less hours, just stop making excuses. Just fucking do it. Just do it. You know what I mean?
I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I say to my kids every day and I talk to them on the phone. I said, look, no matter what, just be the best you can be today. 100%. I don't want you to win everything. 100%. I don't want you to be first and be the greatest at it. Just for you, as long as you can look me in the eye and say, Dad, I did the best I could 100%. Do, I'm proud.
And that's all you can ask for him. And I ask the same for my son. You know what I mean? He's not the best at school. He likes to go in there for the social side of things. But that, I said, mate, just do your best, you know what I mean? And the biggest thing, be respectful, you know what I mean? Doesn't matter if someone's less or someone's better than you, just, you know, doesn't matter. If they're your mate, they're your mate. Good, man. Never above them, never below them, always beside them, you know what I mean?
Always beside them. Always. Love you, bro. Hey, listen, thank you so much for your time. Thanks, Johnny Walker, it's been an honour. And I wish you nothing but greatness for you and your family in the many years to come, bro. And never look back because it's behind you for that reason.
I appreciate it, bro. I love you.
Cheers for being on the Clink.
Thanks, bro.
You too, my brother. Thank you.
For the record, I'm done trying to make y'all comfortable. That's right. For the record, you ain't trying to grow, then it's done for you. That's right. For the record, lab on me going all the way.
All the way.
For the record, ain't trying to link, no time to waste.
Stop calling.
For the record. For the record. For the record. For the record. For the record.